We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zucchi with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we have Cristobal, who is the founder of MM411. And for listeners internationally, 411 is the North American term for information. Welcome aboard, Chris.
Thank you so much. As they, our international crowd always coins us 411.
Yes.
So it works both ways, which is fine by me. I did not pick the name, but, you know, we're kind of stuck with it. And then we've got that Uber-esque MM411, which seems to work.
Yeah, well, in this industry, if we start referring to it, people will think we're not quite completely going to benefit from 420, but we do need to, especially. So my pun there didn't quite land properly, but that's okay. So MM411 is actually tackling one of the biggest problems for medical cannabis, which is education. One of the challenges for the growth in the industry is professionals don't know when to prescribe it and what to prescribe it for in most jurisdictions. What led you to the space and where do you see the impact being most effective soonest?
Well, kind of the elevator conversation of how I got into this. I wasn't part of that internal bubble of legalization. I was a user, but a very casual user, you know, and, you know, I grew up in Colorado and now in Washington State. But the other co-founder of MM411 is a stuntman and racer, a guy named Greg Tracy, which a lot of people, he's now outside of the scenes. But in 2009, we were at the Bonneville Salt Flats and he was racing Suzuki Hayabusa. And he told me the story about his grandmother who had a better quality of life in the last 6 to 9 months because of cannabis than in the previous 3 years because of all the medications she was on. And I said, I get it. You know, I grew up in Colorado. My brother has a very debilitating form of arthritis through his back and hips, and he was a user, and I could see that there was definite relief. Uh-huh. My mom, who just passed at 97 just a few months ago, was a card-carrying member in Colorado for topicals. So she, for her arthritis. And Greg asked me, he said, why does it work? And I said, I have no idea. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. And he said, well, here's what I want you to do. You know, we were always very entrepreneurial. We were doing a lot in the motorsports content space and technology. And he said, let's build a website and let's tell the patient story, but let's base it on science. And I said, well, couple issues, Greg, is one, I don't build websites, you know, so, but luckily my brother did. So we tasked him as part of this early team to build MM411. And the second was that we had just landed him a very prominent toy company, Hot Wheels, to do the X Games stunt live.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I don't think that either one of us can attach our name to this brand at this point. We've got to build it kind of behind the scenes. And that's what we did. So we built it based on science. I'm kind of that nerd it out, want to find out why does it work? What happens? So we started just citing the research citations.
Right.
And when a patient would tell us a story, I would find out, well, if it was for seizure disorders, well, where's the research that supports why cannabis or cannabinoid therapies would work?
Right.
And we just started building. We didn't worry about monetizing it. We had other things in the works. And all of a sudden, by 2014, we had more than 1 million followers on Facebook. And that patient story, but based on science, resonated with a huge global community. And luckily, that same Bonneville event, Greg introduced me to my husband, Andy. So I moved to Washington and now married here. And we were just luckily at the right place at the right time, where it was outlined that as I-502 passed, there would be a requirement for certification for the bud tenders and the medically endorsed dispensaries. And my husband looked at me and said, that's what you're going to do with this little company. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that because I think you'll figure it out. So certainly we did. And then that led me to start, again, looking at the void in, there was no physician training. You know, here, as of 2017, and the stats haven't changed, 89.5% physician or healthcare professionals are not prepared to recommend cannabis. There's 85%, there's no education of the endocannabinoid system in medical schools. That still exists today. And if you talk to your healthcare provider, it generally is they're seeking out other means to figure this whole Pandora's box out, right? And that's
it's a shock that in the medical schools in the U.S., they still don't teach about the organ in any depth and detail, because whether it's descheduled or not, or out there or not, it's still part of our bodies and it interacts. And they need to understand, okay, it interacts, whether they choose to go down the cannabis path in terms of treatments or not, they still need to understand what the hell is going on. Otherwise, you know, it's like going to service a car and not bothering with the wheels.
Right. And I think that all of us on our own healthcare journeys need to have credible information and need to have a choice, right? And the stats still show that, you know, we have an unbelievably horrible opioid problem, right? Uh-huh. And it seems to be that the patients are leading the conversation and the charge of flipping that model of finding alternatives for their own healthcare and their own pain relief. And cannabis many times is that option. Uh-huh. And the thing that always surprises me, because what I hear a lot is, oh, you're approved by the American Medical Association for Category 1 training for dentists, doctors, physician assistants, nurses, social workers, blah, blah, blah. And I said, the problem with that to this day, because we haven't had a true rescheduling event happen, is that as a Schedule 1 drug, by definition, there is no medicinal value. There is no high addiction rate, which we know the science does not support, correct? So if you look at the science, that's where we lean to. But it's the fact that in those courses, we can't even talk about dosing, how to medicate, the actual, because of that Schedule 1 status.
But you can get the data from some of the jurisdictions internationally to build that evidence-based data.
Yes. Well, so that's where we fill the gap. So we have multiple courses. We have just signed a partnership with Dr. Ethan Russo and Credo Science with his business partner, Nisha Whiteley. My goal is with Raphael Mishulam, who discovered isolated THC in 1964, and then kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together with the discovery of the endocannabinoid system by Dr. Aileen Howlett. We know that what we missed is that we didn't get enough of his life recordings. So with the Credo Science and Dr. Ethan Russo partnership, my goal as a founder of a company and an education company is to make sure we preserve his voice. Right. So we are taking all of his research and we're just doing a deep dive very quickly with webinars, recording his presentations that he's given for years, and then doing what MM411 is really known for, is then creating a separate file that you can literally click on an end note, everything is cited, and then dive deep into the actual research.
Right. That's excellent, because that's a phenomenal research tool for people who want to really dive into the thing, because the access to information is, you know, the problem with the rescheduling is not a question of is it safe or is it not. It really boils down to a monetary question. And the pharmaceutical companies that own so much of the space can't control cannabis the way they do other molecules because of the varieties and and I don't mean the varietal in the plant, but I mean because of the variety of molecules that get produced by each of the plant. And so it makes it a daunting task, which it's worth it for them to protect their billion-dollar marketplaces for each of the other molecules. And this one is just too difficult vis-a-vis the others. But that access to information, which you're pointing to, those are reference documents that everybody needs to be able to have. Even if the scheduling issues exist, it doesn't mean that we have to be absent of knowledge.
Correct. So in my perfect world as an educator, is that I think that you have to have certifications. You know, we still have to have some monetary revenue source, you know, as a company. We have a wide range of different categories and rapidly going just from the medical to expanding horizontally. But I kind of describe it, if, you know, I'm a visionary, that's, you know, where I excel, is that if I could look at this big content bucket, I would have obviously the certifications that are paid for, but then create some sort of community that if you had everything in that garden, it would be chaotic. But if you could create waist-high edges and have your veterinarians over here with animals and your pharmacists over here that are out of, you know, the UK and, you know, global conversations happening in those gardens and in that community, I think that would be the perfect scenario as I build this company out. I really believe that content, to your point, and the research should be very readily and widely available. We certainly still have a gap to fill with the amount of research that's being done because of the drug schedule. And if you look at what's happening internationally, we have a really strong team in Japan, a husband and wife team, similar story. They had a patient story. They came to me right before COVID hit and sent an email, and I was like terrified. How do you go with a company as an entrepreneur and you know, at that point we were still building. And now go to Japan and translations. And we just buckled down during COVID and did it. And that is one of our biggest markets to date. And I see the EU. We've got now partnerships that we're about ready to announce in Poland, Germany, UK, Australia. Obviously, Mexico, Latin America is going to be huge. But where I want to go is really make sure that, you know, because again, I'm not a doctor, so sometimes I get knocked about that. Uh-huh. The reality is that I'm really good about aggregating data. You know, that's kind of what I've done my entire career in different areas and different focused points, you know, whether it's motorsports or technology or cannabis. It's just, this certainly is a passion project. I fight every day for the patient. So anyone who doubts that I'm here standing after almost 15 years of extremely hard work. You know, we didn't have investors. We didn't have funding. We had to go sell something. We had to build it and then go sell it and build it again and then go sell it again. And the education model in the U.S. is interesting because in every state that requires certifications, and many don't of the legal states, it's just a free-for-all, which to me is crazy. A nail salon tech or a dog groomer is required to have more certifications and education than someone who is working with a medical, you know, in a medical capacity. Even in adult use states, any consultant, bud tender, whatever you want to call them, bud tender is fine in my world. Those people, those, you walk into a dispensary because you're trying to genuinely solve a problem. You know, I can't sleep. I have anxiety. I have pain, you know, being one of the most, they are the front facing part of this conversation. And that's the piece that, you know, you need some sort of education and certification based on science, based on the history of where the plant has come. And honestly, contraindications, it's still medicine. It's still not a perfect, it's not the end all answer for everyone.
It's not, right? And it's, I always tell people, it's not a miracle cure because it doesn't cure.
Right.
It helps manage.
Right.
Right. And that's a huge difference between how people present the information and, but also how people approach a lot of medical conditions. They don't look at immediately as chronic and how do we manage. They look at what's a cure.
Correct. Correct. And the rescheduling is interesting. I had a very interesting conversation with Dr. Russo. Uh-huh. I'm excited as everybody. You know, I think it's obviously showing the direction is the correct direction, you know, or righted the right way. But as a Schedule 3 drug, it still requires a prescription,
yep.
Right? So your doctor still is going to have that whole dosing, complexity of how do you say, oh, you need 3 joints of White Widow,
That issue actually with it bothers me less than some others, because there are the doctors who will really learn and investigate and become educated, and they'll develop practices. And like we're out in the rest of the world, they go through telehealth and they see many, many patients a day, and it's a wonderful business opportunity for them. The challenge still becomes getting the medical schools to start teaching and teaching appropriately. And with the rescheduling to Schedule 3, the other problem is, of course, because it goes through the pharmaceutical channels, you're looking at, people are always concerned about the FDA, but it's actually the EPA becomes the challenge for the industry. And the industry in the U.S. is not up to standard with the rest of the world and isn't pharmaceutical grade. And
agreed.
Most of them don't know and haven't prepared. So there's going to be really earthquakes going through the industry as a whole, and the dynamics of how you make money, where you make money, but how you get the right molecules to the right patient is going to shift dramatically. And unfortunately, most aren't prepared.
I would agree. 100%.
I get phone calls from some of the organizations, some companies who produce, to talk about it, but most of them don't actually want to address the problem. And that's scary.
It is. So in your opinion, what makes that shift to pivot to that investment?
Then it becomes a question, is it the production industry in the U.S. going to survive?
Well, I think it will even out the mass players. The opinion and even from friends, if I go to a dinner party or whatever, it's, oh, you're in the cannabis industry, you must be a zillionaire. It's like, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. And I do think that there needs to be a leveling of who's legitimate and, quite frankly, who's not. I think that I see in some of the international markets that because of regulation, because of government, we tend to be aligned with government. So sometimes, we work with the DOHs in the states to develop programs. Yep. But back to the international market, their rules are so stringent that I think it actually will be a plus for the industry.
Yeah. Well, it'll be, imports are going to be an important factor. Now, firms in the U.S. can make adjustments today so that they're ready, because the challenge is when rescheduling happens, the EPA doesn't have to wait for regulatory framework. It can just walk into any facility the next day. And because it's a medical product, if it isn't to grade, they can shut it down.
Right.
Right. And it doesn't matter what the states say.
Which, in my opinion, is good, because the states don't quite understand it all the time.
Well, it's a challenge, right? Because there's been an incredible amount of money invested, and there's a lot of activity. And there's the employment and there's the tax revenue for the states, which is critical for them today. But there's the long-term health issues, which also have to be balanced and taken into account. And the states don't look at them, it's not that they don't care, it's they're not looking at the same problems or issues as the EPA would. But their authority is unmatched.
Right, right.
And that's going to be really what is going to have an earthquake through the system as a whole. From a production end and from a supply end. Now, from a pharmaceutical end, it's going to guarantee that the product that comes through that part of the process is absolutely clean, pure, and matched up to the patient needs. There isn't the variability, right? It's not just a question of here's the percentage of THC and CBD. It's much more refined in terms of what else is in there and how do we qualify it. But the companies which take the leap and make the adjustments today with an eye towards what's coming are going to be phenomenally successful. But the ones who don't are going to be wiped out, and I'd hate to be one of their investors.
Right. It's interesting on that same point is I'm asked many times, what are we as an education company? And I said, really a compliance company. Yep. And to your point that where I'm looking at not just our medical track or our industry worker tracks of certifications, we're looking at those ISO standards and GMP compliance, and we're building out coursework again, very horizontal now that for me, if I look where we want to be a year from now, it's really in that university framework of offering what I think there's some very good programs out there at the university level, but I think there's room for improvement. And I also, we are very strong members of ASTM. So we're helping write global standards for what's called D37 for the cannabis marketplace. And I really believe, again, in that compliance bucket, that we have to look at what are the standards that kind of, to your point, 100%, that create the checklist that we can go down to make sure that we have not only safe medicine, but it meets standards. The people within the industry have to have a certain level of education to meet those compliance standards as well. I think you're 100% correct.
And, you know, that issue goes back to the earliest point. The medical schools aren't teaching the endocannabinoid system and how it works, but also part of it is they look at the production of the molecules that could be used by the doctors and the lack of standards, the quality variances that's out there makes them back off, because it's not like, you know, they would allow anybody prescribing penicillin if it wasn't the standard product in everywhere across the country.
Right.
Right.
Right. And you so know, the penicillin or the Advil or whatever medicine or pharmaceutical medicine is exactly the same wherever you buy it.
Exactly. And they depend on that.
Yeah. And I think that that's where we should, you know, rely on that, again, that data. This is a data-driven model at that point. The data is going to dictate the safety and quality of the medicine. And
exactly.
It should.
It should. And it's key to, you know, the data is key to helping people understand and the practitioners understand what to use, how to use, and what the outcomes are likely to be. Mm-hmm. And the standardization of the product is key to getting that data so that it actually is dependable and the evidence-based information isn't just that cannabis helped, but here's the particular combination of molecules and the strain and every varietal information, how it was produced, because you produce the same varietal in two different environments, it's going to have different, express different cannabinoids and different terpenes and flavonoids and you name it, it's going to have different outcomes. That standardization is what the medical community, the educational side needs to know what are they talking about, because
Agreed.
That's how they operate, right?
Agree. We can fill in some of those gaps at a very pedestrian level, you know,
30,000 feet, right? They need us to get down to much more granular.
Yeah, and the reality is, and I talk about this a lot, is that none of us start this journey, whether you're inside the bubble or outside of it, knowing anything.
Exactly.
You think that, you know, whether it's weed or pot or ganja or cannabis or marijuana, whatever you want to call it, is that you will always smoke it and you're always going to get high. And that's where the journey started with me, because I didn't understand it.
Yep.
And then you start learning a little bit more, a little bit more, and you start being an advocate and have a voice that certainly I didn't plan on having, but I'm very proud to have. For patients and patient safety. But to your point, yeah, it's like where we need to go with this journey, and it's a long one, as leaders in the space. And then you look at the psychedelics, and, you know, I've listened to, you know, quite a few of your podcasts because I'm fascinated with that whole side of medicine. Is when and how do we finally get to the point that the physician does feel comfortable with the education, the book of knowledge, and the standardization that we need to get there for truly a safe option for patients.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I love the whole, to try to explain to individuals that are either asking me when, you know, I go to work out and does it work and why a topical? I'm like, first of all, I'm not a physician, so I can't give medical advice. So let's frame it that way. I know the law. But is that you, it's your personal journey. You know, it's still botanical. And I think that even as we get to some very key standards. There's going to be the reality that the patient journey is still such a part of this whole medicinal side, and to keep record, you know, record keeping and really make sure you're understanding what you're putting in your body. I know that, you know, even in our household of hemp-based products and now mushroom coffees and the things that does it really make you feel better, that you've got to really listen to what is happening based on your own health and wellness journey.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, some of those are, you know, it's just like the whole psychedelic space is so much simpler than cannabis because you are dealing with very precise molecules. But we could go into a lot longer conversation about that. But unfortunately, Chris, we are out of time for today.
Hey, no worries. It was a pleasure. Thank you again for having me. I really appreciate, you know, you acknowledging that there's a place and a need for education.
It's key to the success and key to helping patients. And really, I think most of us who have been around the industry for a while got involved because we were trying to help people. And without education, you never get there. So thanks for being on the show. And thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back again with you soon. I'm Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.